Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Hey, what's up, everyone? It's Tyler Dunn at the Go Along Podcast. A quick preview of this episode. Paul Danner Jr. of The Athletic, the excellent Cincinnati Bengals beat writer, joined me for a really interesting conversation about a really interesting team, the Cincinnati Bengals, one of those teams, for whatever reason, we're not really talking nearly enough about, by and large, all offseason, all summer long, but they were in the Super Bowl last year, and we plan on getting to a lot of Bengals content here at Go Along. So a huge welcome to all of the Bengal fans who found our podcast and found our newsletter, GoLongTD.com, this past week. I've noticed your arrival, and I greatly appreciate it. So thank you so much. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation, Paul. We get into Ja'Marr Chase's unbelievable training camp, which he somehow has managed to take his game to another level, and Paul really gets into the detail of that, and then we kind of get back to that defense, which is really what we're not talking nearly enough about with this team. The defense was lights out toward the end of last season. Some Joe Burrow talk, some talk about the beat. Really enjoyed this one. Hope you do too. Thanks, everyone. What's up, everyone? This is the Go Along Podcast, and absolutely thrilled to welcome on our next guest. Because, Paul, we've got a lot of Bengals fans listening and reading at Go Along, so we got to give them what they want. They want some Paul Danner Jr. in their life. How long have you covered the team? You're obviously at The Athletic right now covering the Bengals, but as long as I've known you, you've been there.
Yeah, this is, let's see, my first training camp was in Georgetown, Kentucky in 2010. So I guess this is my 13th training camp covering the team for a number of different outlets, but as like the main full guy since 2013, 14 in that area. So almost about a decade full, and then a bunch of training camps. So we've seen it all.
Well, you do, not just blowing smoke up your ass, you do a phenomenal job. I mean, for those who don't know, Paul, I mean, your versatility, breaking news, writing features, game stories, columns. Really, if I ever want to know something about the Bengals, I'm reading your stuff. So thank you for everything you do. And, you know, Bengals fans are lucky to have you, I think.
Appreciate it. And hear that podcast growling, our podcast that we have, that we love doing here, covering the team too. There's too many. You can't have to these days, right, TD? I mean, like, if you are not doing a little bit of everything, you're a dinosaur. I mean, it's hard. Totally. It's hard to not be, you know, I remember, you know, you talk about when we first started, not to tangent already before we even get going, but like when, you know, 10, 12 years ago, I mean, you were siloed. Like you hear you're the news writer side. You write columns. Okay. You're on the radio now. Like, if you're one person, you have to be doing all that. And I always felt like, oh man, I'm like a jack of all trades. But now the evolution of media, like, you better be a jack of all trades or you can't do it, you know? And so it's kind of fun to see the direction that it's gone, because I think it's spawned a lot of really, really talented people that are young and really good at a lot of different stuff.
it's enjoyable too. I mean, you get to tap into different parts of your brain, right? Like you're covering the team, and you've probably written about Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Mixon more times than you can count. But to be able to come at the team from different angles, you know, one day you're trying to figure out what's going on with Jesse Bates and that contract situation, and it's, you know, got some hard news there, some meat on the bone, and then the next day maybe you can just go off on an opinion you have about something. You've kind of you have that freedom to just think differently day to day on the beat.
Yeah, and I think you have to, or just, you know, long form talk it out, you know, and show personality that way and be just more honest about, you know, it's the old, you want it to be your friend, your knowledgeable friend on the couch next to you. I just think people are so much better at being able to make fans feel like they're your friend on the couch now because of outlets like this, like everybody has a podcast, but, you know, to be able to write in different ways and to just, and show that you're just a person trying to relay what you know to people in different ways and try to help people, whether it be better connected to the team or feel like you're being accountable to the team. Like you can just do that in so many different ways. Now it makes it, I think, a lot more engaging for fans to kind of understand not just the team, but your job, you know, and you a little bit. And, you know, I think that's fun. Makes it more fun.
I'm hoping we can add meme to your, you know, various job titles, just meme. That's it. You're a phenomenal meme. I wasn't sure it was you at first, and then I'm looking closer. I'm like, that's absolutely Paul. So for people who don't know, that clip that went viral, Ja'Marr Chase, and a lot of training camp clips have seemed to take off this camp, but that was a legit, insane grab by Ja'Marr Chase near your sideline where the reporters watch practice. And I had since left Cincinnati. I wish I was there standing by you. But your face, man, the camera captured it perfectly. You captured the catch perfectly, the disbelief of the face scrunching.
I've never really had that many people pause and zoom my face and send it to me before, like over and over again. I've that's, you know, the one rule in life. Don't be a meme. Whatever happened, wherever you go, whatever you do, don't be a meme. And then all of a sudden you are. And I was just like, but I felt like it was just a total natural reaction to what a catch. And can you believe this dude? Like, always with this stuff. Like he's just ridiculous. He's had an unbelievable camp. And that face, I really have made that face probably once a day just on something that he's done. Cause he's just, he's just ridiculous. And it's crazy to watch him every day, whatever he does.
It's a good reminder. Like we're all in this world where everybody has a camera. We're always a split second away from being immortalized by just the way our face looks or something we're doing. You know what? Really
unfortunate.
It's such an innocent face you made, but like, think about, I mean, who knows? You could be picking your nose. You could be just looking disgusted. It could have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
What's that?
That's why I feel, you know, for these athletes too, like they become memes just for anything they do out there on the field that's stupid that would normally just be forgotten. I mean, and you're out there in the heat of battle, true and everything, trying to like make a living and kill yourself against these other elite athletes, and you do one weird thing and now that's all you hear about for the next like 3 weeks, you know? So that's where we are though now, you know. Don't be a meme, but you probably will. I think we all are going to be a meme at some point.
Exactly. It'll get us all. Definitely. One way or another. Social media will victimize us all.
On this podcast, you might get me and turn me into a meme. I don't know if I can trust you on that.
Well, we don't like to cancel anybody. We're very anti-cancel culture here. Okay, so you're good. Safe. You're safe.
Good. Thank you. This is safe.
You always have a home at Go Along. If you do get canceled, just come on over. We'll hire you. We'll give you some beer or something.
It's good to have a landing spot. I like that. If I ever screw up too bad.
We might as well talk about the Bengals a little bit. So Ja'Marr Chase, you wrote a story, full disclosure, I haven't read it yet. I see a lot of people talking about it, and I cannot wait to sink my teeth into your feature on Ja'Marr Chase. But give us a little sneak peek at what you learned about, as you said, a dude who is just terrorizing defenses this summer.
Yeah, I mean, he really has kind of been, and it's odd to call him the star of camp. The camp's felt weird without Burrow because, you know, you were there. It feels false. It's like everything's like, okay, we haven't really started yet until Nine starts throwing the ball. But it's crazy to say that a guy who was the offensive rookie of the year and really to talk the league and help drive a team to the Super Bowl could be the star of camp. Like, you know, almost like a, not a surprise, but almost like a rise. We'd call him a riser, right? We always could do risers or fallers or something like that. I mean, he's been so you can almost see the jump that he's taken. But what has stood out to me in the point of the piece is, you know, the Bengals didn't know totally what they had in Chase last year. They thought, they hoped they did. But remember this point in camp last year, it was, can Chase catch the ball? He had drops. He's talking about the stripes on the ball. And, right. And he had a bad game against Washington. And they're like, he drops everything and he's getting clowned, you know, on every national show. And people are calling him a bust. And he comes out and has this great season. So, but there was, you know, that was not made up. That was not some fictionalized thing. It got out of control, but it wasn't fiction. He really was struggling in camp. He struggled in games. He was in his own head, admittedly. And so they came into the season not really knowing what to expect of Chase, what to get. Then about midway through, he's a phenom, and he and the skill set you thought you had was even better. And so it took a while for them to really start opening the box on ways to use him, because he's such a versatile receiver. He's not just an X run, you know, run a nine down the field. He's his catch and run and his after the catch is like Cooper Kupp stuff, you know, where he never gets tackled by the first guy. And you saw that a bunch in the game, the first game against the Ravens. He goes in the blender and he goes 82 yards, part of his 200 yard day. You know, you saw him do everything. Then you saw his just pure acceleration, like the home game against Kansas City in week 17, one of his most famous plays of the year. He just catches a basic comeback and outruns the entire Chiefs secondary out of nowhere, all that had the angle on him. They learned over the course of the year what they had, and they tried to use it more. And you saw the point. I went and looked at slot usage, because it's like, okay, they have a one now. They have a legit one. Learn now how to start using him to keep other teams off balance, because they show up looking for where's one, where's Chase. And at week 13 last year, you could see they dropped the hammer of expanding his usage, where he was only in the slot about 10% of the time through the first 12 weeks. Then the last nine, which includes their run to the Super Bowl, it was 25%. And the target percentage in the slot went from about 11%. So just of the slot routes in the first week nine, he was only getting about 11% of targets. So then the last portion of the season, all the way also up into the mid-20s, where Burrow was looking for him more inside there. The plays were designed more to utilize him inside. And it's no coincidence he took off again. People don't realize about Chase's first season, he had the incredible start. Then teams really focused on him, started taking him away. T. Higgins' star rose as teams started to pay attention. And then that last portion, as the Bengals started moving around, Chase took off a second time to that next level. Well, now they had a whole offseason to brainstorm other ways to do this with him and utilize that versatile skill set. And they kind of spent a bunch of time brainstorming, coming up with ways to do in the backfield more, in the slot more, design motions, things that stacks, things that can help free him up to keep teams thinking about him at the line. So then there goes Higgins, there goes Boyd, there goes whoever, or there goes Chase, right? So keeping teams off balance, never knowing where he is, they needed to get him up at the levels of Justin Jefferson, Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill, guys that are constantly used all over the formation. He needed to be up on that level. He was one of the lowest of the guys last year that had 80 receptions and 1,000 yards. There was 28 of them. He was 25th in slot usage. That's an insanely low number for somebody who is a born versatile weapon. That's part of his number one skill set. So I expect that number to be up in the 30% range, double that this year, and see a lot more versatility being how they get him the ball, because teams aren't going to let him just run down the field and go over top of him again. You're going to see deep shells. You're going to see all that stuff. And then it just opens up underneath for him to kind of do his catch and run stuff. So it's kind of the evolution of Chase that we're going to see in year two that we saw at the tail end of last year, which is a very, very, very long-winded answer that no one's now going to pay to read the piece because I just described it.
We appreciate it. That's right. Everybody subscribe to Paul's work. That was a phenomenal breakdown, though. Really, I've never heard it in those terms. And, man, a lot to unpack. I want to bring it back, though, to that training camp last year because you're right. We forget the drops and talking about not having the stripes on the ball when it's coming towards you. He did sound like a receiver who was in his own head. And it's interesting to hear you say he was. You know, sometimes I wonder, all right, we're not there every day. Like, of course, everybody who's there every day sees that he's catching the ball a ton in practice and he's fine. But he wasn't fine. He was mentally a little off. How bad was it at that point?
No, and they recognized it. He talked about, you know, and this was, again, this is the power of Joe Burrow. And about how much Burrow's confidence. I mean, there was one public, private, just Burrow was in full defense of Chase the entire time. You know, I had coaches tell me off the record, every single time this ever got brought up around Burrow, all he said was, he'll be fine. He'll be fine. When the lights come on, he'll be fine. And he never showed a single ounce privately of any doubt. And it's to Chase, and then publicly the same way, always defending him. So when after the opener, when Chase catches a deep ball for a touchdown and does the gritty and goes off and they win, beat Minnesota in overtime, Burrow, before he sits down in the press conference, goes, oh, I thought he couldn't catch, to all of us in the press conference room, you know? And because it was his way of saying, I've been telling y'all this was going to be fine, like to everybody inside the room, outside the room, because he knew that he needed to be in his corner, that Chase was in his own head, that Chase was feeling it a little bit, and Chase was wondering, like you do if you're a rookie and you're struggling and you're feeling that pressure, that he just needed somebody to believe in him. Burrow's so innate. He's so natural at understanding what guys need that he knew that, and it really helped Chase get through that and get out of his own head and take off the way that he did.
We forget the power of that kind of support too. I think you're seeing it to the extreme in Miami, right? I mean, with Tua Tagovailoa, the flip side with a quarterback whose confidence was just mashed the bits with the previous coaching staff and the offense that they were running and was in a really bad place. I mean, he knew they didn't want him. They didn't want him. And now you have Tyreek Hill, Chase Edmonds, Mike McDaniel. I mean, everybody at every opportunity is just banging the table for Tua. I mean, we'll see if Tua's good. We don't really know yet, yeah. But he's been given every opportunity. And I think that, God, just hearing your teammates and your peers speak in those terms privately and publicly, the mental side of the game, we forget about, we underestimate. It's not played on a spreadsheet. All that stuff matters for a guy like Ja'Marr Chase.
I got to admit, we've talked about over the offseason, we had something about, you know, where were we most wrong on some sports cliche or something over the last decade? And I said, you know what? Culture. My mind has been changed because I got so sick of every single introductory press conference for every coach ever. Culture. Got to set the culture. Gonna set my culture. And I was just like, come on, man. Like, bring in the players. Culture is a winning streak, okay? Culture is everybody wins, everybody's happy, right? And there's obviously that's part of it. Like, establishing culture is easy to do when you're winning and a lot harder to do when you're losing. But I watched it here, and this was not a team of stars last year. And they have some. They have the quarterback, they have Chase, they have, you know, dudes, Trey Hendrickson, whatever. But it's about, this league is about getting the most out of everybody else. Your stars have to carry. You have to have that. You have to have the QB or you're toast. But the rest, the next step where the Bengals ended up last year, is about belief, is about dudes that get the most out of themselves because they love going to work every day. They, you know, build off of each other. And I just never really believed that stuff until I watched it with my own eyes happen with this team. Really, not just last year, you know, really in the background during their 4-11-1 season in 2020.
Right, that win against the Steelers was
notable.
Underrated
that
win.
Was the public. That was really the public view of it, where it was like, oh, okay, this team is still playing hard. It still matters. They're playing with an energy and a belief. But that was really simmering in the background from the midpoint of that season on, where it was like, man, they're not winning. They're not talented enough. They got a lot of problems, and there's some issues still with some toxicity. But like, you could see a portion was evolving. The vision was starting to evolve. They'd just been so, you know, they were playing without Burrow the second half of the season. I think you would have seen so much more of it. It was starting to build. And then so when he came back healthy and they added Chase and they kind of got rid of all of the old Marvin Lewis pieces, finally, it just took them 2 years to kind of really gut the locker room and with all the guys that they wanted to have in there. And most importantly, clear the path for the guys they brought in to be culture setters and leaders to actually do that. Because when you come in, and this is no slam these guys, they were just from the previous group. When Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap and AJ Green and Giovanni Bernard, who are great guys and did great things and were phenomenal football players, but when they're there, you cede the room to them. They earned it. They're the vets. Mm-hmm. This is their place. They've been here for a decade or however long. When they're gone, you feel like you can take ownership of the room. You feel like you can move in the direction that you've wanted to. And that was a big deal. And that didn't happen until the year before that. And so then that culture could really take off. And you just saw it. There was just such energy. There was such fire in the way they played every week. Like, you just don't see. And then you saw all these role players start to really have great career years. All of them. Because it built on itself, you know, defensively. Chidobe Awuzie was incredible. A very good corner. It became a great corner. Eli Apple, you know, the whole Mike Hilton was taken to the next level. I mean, Trey Hendrickson, Larry Ogunjobi, BJ Hill, they traded from the Giants. And these are guys that came in and also were playing great because they fed off of each other. They fed into this whole thing. And that is real. And I've just never seen it quite like I saw it happen last year. And we saw that in the very beginning, early portions of the season, even when they were 5-4 and, you know, whatever, you still saw that they were getting the most out of it because guys really loved the team. They loved playing for each other. They loved the direction it was headed, and it was fun. And I've covered a lot of teams around here that were not a lot of those things. And you see why teams lose in the first round of the playoffs, and then why teams can make special runs. Not that they will every year, but you can see that that's the difference. In this league, where the talent's the same across the board, that thing, whatever it is that you're able to create, mm-hmm. is really the stuff that sets off special runs.
I feel like we're a couple bald guys staring into each other's football souls. I could not agree with you more. I did the same.
It's so true, though.
Honestly, when I was at Bleacher Report, I want to say it was ahead of the 2018 season when the Browns, you know, they get Odell and Jarvis Landry and Baker's back and Freddie Kitchens is the head coach. I mean, I wrote a big story. I spent some time around the team mocking the idea of culture, right? Just outright, yeah. You know, just looking down upon anybody who you know, thinks that culture matters. Because I agree, it's talent. Like, you'd rather have talent. And then these last 5 years since, I've kind of come around to it. I just think, like you, I hate hearing the term and hearing the press conference, you know, cliches and dribble, just ugh. But when done right, you need it. You're absolutely right. Like, you want to maximize every ounce of potential in every single player. And I love the list of players you just rattled off, and it's kind of a good transition into the defense too. But you've got dudes that were let go by other teams or not re-signed by other teams who are pissed off, you know, kind of outcasts, have every reason to go out there and ball out and have a career year. And they somehow were able to find that magic formula, that magic potion, and make Patrick Mahomes look like a shitty quarterback in that second half. The same Patrick Mahomes who did whatever he wanted to against the Bills the week before.
You say, I mean, that second half, that was the second time they did it to him that year. The same thing happened in week 17. People don't remember that, you know, the game that the Bengals won to clinch the AFC North and the playoffs and all that stuff, beating Patrick Mahomes when Ja'Marr Chase had 266. But really, a big part of that story was they had a huge lead in that game, the Chiefs did. and the Bengals just shut them down, only 3 points in the second half. And then the same thing in the AFC title game. So I think that's where frustration comes from people here, certainly Bengals fans, but players on that defense, of being like, yo, I talk about them as a fluke. They did it twice to Patrick Mahomes last year. They beat him twice, and they did it the same way both times in their place with all of it on the line and at Paul Brown Stadium. And people kept trying to call it a fluke the whole way through. And it's like, how many times you got to do something to the premier player in the sport, you know, and prove that you can beat the premier team that's been to the four straight AFC championship games until it's considered real. And I think that defense felt like they fought that all year. What people don't realize is during that run, because everybody wanted to talk about Burrow, and they should. He's that dude. But, like, their defense carried them. I mean, the offense struggled in the postseason often because of the sacks, everything. So people are like, oh, Burrow overcame the sacks. Yeah, so did a defense that was incredibly opportunistic, got turnovers, got big stops, and when short fields were created against them, they forced field goals over and over again and made the plays. I mean, you know, they had three straight games. Every AFC playoff win ended with the last defensive play being an interception. Okay, so you had Jermaine Pratt in the wild card game, ended it on fourth and goal from the nine, intercepting the ball so that the Raiders couldn't tie it up or potentially go for two and win it. Then you had the win in Tennessee was the interception where Eli Apple breaks it up and Logan Wilson picks it off to set up Evan McPherson from 52 yards to beat the Titans. And then you had Jesse Bates's famous play where he knocks the ball back to Von Bell in overtime to set up Burrow on the short field and the field goal to win it. The defense set up every single one. They finished every game with a turnover, with an interception. And they did this all year. I mean, the opener against Minnesota was getting ready to win. It's a long forgotten game from week one, but they're just running it out in overtime, giving it to Dalvin Cook in Bengals end, getting ready to trot out their kicker. And Jermaine Pratt rips it out on defensive play for them, number like 92 on like a 90-degree day. Just right before he goes to the ground, rips it out. They get the fumble. Burrow goes down and puts him in the field goal range with no time left. And they kick the field goal to beat the Vikings in overtime. They did it all year like this. But they got no credit because everyone wants to talk about Chase and Higgins and Boyd and Burrow and Mixon, and rightfully so. But under the radar, they were eighth in points per drive allowed last year. Top 10 defense coming from deep in the 20s for the previous 2 years. Trey Hendrickson was a legit star. Chido Bayouze was a straight hard number one, undeniable number one. PFF, I think, had him graded in the top five in regular season. You had young players emerging everywhere. Jesse Bates is a star. Von Bell was a leader. I mean, they had great players, but they never were talked about, never really given much credit, never really given much attention because of the star power on the other side of the ball. But quietly, the reason the Bengals were playing in the Super Bowl and damn near won the thing, by the way, interception by Chido Bayouze sets them up, you know, as well. You know, they got the turnover. They just didn't get one last stop.
Held them to 16 points with 3 minutes left, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, you know, you can only do so much. You know, they'll regret the fourth and one on the Rams' last drive. Lou Anarumo said he's watched it probably a million times, where they had a fourth and one on the Rams' go-ahead drive deep in the Rams' own end. They ran a jet sweep to Cooper Kupp, and Von Bell comes on the blitz on the outside. Perfect call against it. But Kupp just makes a great instinctual play and cuts inside Von Bell and gets the first down. I mean, if they make that play, it could be basically game over. I mean, the Bengals are set up late. So it's, again, one play away from a completely different narrative. But I the one thing that to me was criminal about last year was how little people talked about the Bengals defense and how good they actually did play and were all year.
And it's just crazy to me, Paul, how, I mean, you're seeing long form stories written and everything when it comes to Sean McVay, the genius of Sean McVay just reaches another level this offseason, where if they get one stop on that last drive, I mean, we're talking about Sean McVay pissing down his leg in another Super Bowl. I mean, I don't. Yeah. It just seems like they were just running into a brick wall all night, and the Bengals deserve a lot of credit for that. He had no answers for the Bengals defense most of that night, and then the last drive they decide, okay, let's just force the ball to Cooper Kupp. Enough, you know, screwing around. Let's just get him the ball. Doesn't really matter what the coverage is. They do it. They get down there. Eli Apple on Cooper Kupp, not exactly a fair fight one-on-one in that spot with that throw. And now it's, you know, the narrative is the exact opposite. We'd be talking about the Bengals defense in totally different terms if they win that Super Bowl, if they get a stop there.
For years of watching teams lose at the precipice, you know, when under Marvin Lewis, where they lost in the first round of the playoffs 5 straight years, you know, I developed a very keen sense of this line: to the winners go the narratives. Okay. So the Bengals were considered losers. They were considered untalented, you know, choke artists, whatever. And those great players on those teams were diminished for how good they were.
Yeah.
Because they would lose in some of these games, whether it was those players' faults or not. Or, you know, there would be all kinds of crazy stuff. You know, the legend of the meltdown at Paul Brown game, where perfect happens with Antonio Brown and all that stuff that went down in that game. But all of that was painted in a very much a pro Steelers light after that, because to the winners go the narratives, right? Both teams melted down pretty hard actually in that game. And there was a lot of crazy stuff that went down, but nobody ever talks about the one side of it, because to the winners go the narratives. And it's the same way here, you know, with the Super Bowl, where you're talking about one, just half an extra second on Aaron Donald on 4th and 1. And we're talking about Burrow to Chase to win the Super Bowl in one of the greatest, what would have been one of the ballsiest throws and potential touchdowns in NFL history, if he throws it with Chase running with Ramsey on the ground.
Oh my God.
I don't know if you know this. I know locally people know this because we talked about it a bunch, but he audibled to that. He sent
really
Chase on the go ball. Think about the cojones it takes on a 2-minute drive in the Super Bowl on 4th and 1 in your own end to send Jamar Chase on a go ball and say, I'm going to throw it for all the marbles right here, because I've got press man against Jalen Ramsey, but I believe in my dude that much. I want to have that available to me, and I want to throw that. And he did. And maybe it was a mistake. Maybe it was a fool's errand, but it was so close. People don't realize. I don't think that people quite realize how close that was to happening. Him literally hot routing Jamar Chase on what would have been one of the ballsiest throws in NFL history, and could have gone for a touchdown if they could have blocked Aaron Donald. But I bet a lot of teams can say that about a lot of plays.
I think you're right. I don't think not nearly enough people know that.
Yeah. It's the other side of that play that doesn't, that gets it, it. Trust me, it's known here locally. People have seen this, sweated, had nightmares over the snapshot of Burrow going to the ground while Ramsey's on the ground and Chase is running free. But, you know, it's what could have been, I guess.
It's unbelievable. I mean, yeah, it's, I haven't looked at the all 22 of that one, but wide open.
Take a peek.
Right there.
Take a peek. Oof. It's something. Yeah. Well, I mean, there was a couple. I mean, you know, it was really two series in that game, not to go, you know, revisionist history on the Super Bowl here. But, I mean, they have a 3rd and 1, 4th and 1 on the opening drive of the game, and they aren't able to convert it. 3rd and 1. They gave it to Samaje Perine, and he didn't get it without Joe Mixon in there. And then on 4th and 1, Burrow misses a wide open T. Higgins just standing there in the slot and tries to force the ball to Jamar Chase. And the Rams go the other way at midfield. Last drive of the game, 3rd and 1, 4th and 1. They give it to Samaje Perine. He runs it and Aaron Donald stops him. And then the play, of course, on 4th and 1 where he goes down that everyone's seen a million times. And, you know, again, that defines the game right there. I mean, convert 1 yard a couple of times and they're scoring points on the opening drive, or they're doing what they did all year, which is probably score points on that last drive. And that's how close it was. But, you know, if you listen to the way people talk about it, it was never close, never even that close. Like the Rams basically ran away with it only because of luck and this, you know, but that's how it is painted often. And that's how the Rams are painted from last year. Clearly they had the right way of doing it the whole time. I mean, we're talking about a play.
Yeah.
A call. Yeah. I mean, the, you know, the, they didn't have to call that call on Logan Wilson down there inside the 10.
No.
That ends up setting it up. It would have been fourth. It would have been just like the Raiders game. It would have been fourth down and a long way to go to try to get it into the end zone. Maybe they do. But, I mean, again, that's all of these things at that level. You know, we act like there's such a huge difference between the Rams and the Bengals last year and because of the way it ended. But so minuscule, so tiny.
I mean, forget like about all these details over time.
Large part in the NFL. Yeah.
Once you win
Bengals
the Super
fans
Bowl,
have not forgotten these
Bengals fans haven't forgotten, but like to your point on
no, nor,
the winners
nor will
the
they until they until Burrow can break through.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean that, what an egregious flag called on that on Logan Wilson there. I mean it was
but you know what? There were, you know, I thought as a whole, actually, I thought it
really
I thought the refs evened out in that game. Well, you had the deep touchdown to Higgins where he clearly pulled on
that's right.
Ramsey's face mask. That, and then you had that call that kind of, to me, those were almost, and then the play before that, Jermaine Pratt clearly like almost tackled the running back out of the backfield and they didn't call it. Cause I had a fateful tweet. You should never have a fateful tweet, but it was, well, I guess if they're not calling that, the refs are clearly just not interested in throwing any flags in this game right after that play. And then after that came the onslaught of flags. There was like three flags, all of them in down there. You know, the next play was Wilson and there was a PI and a, or whatever it was. And it's like they it changed at the end, which is where the frustration came from the Bengals and their fans, was that they started calling the game different at the very end than they had really all game. But I really didn't think that was one where anybody should be blaming referees like you would. And like people still do, probably Seahawks fans, I'm sure, what from like 04 against the Steelers. I know there's still a lot of.
I just want prison rules at the end of games. I don't even care. Like, just completely get rid of the flags. Just no, I just
send the
refs. I want
the
refs to go home.
Early.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Just go home. Get the hell out of here. Let them play.
There should be a bit. That should be the thing. Like at the 2 minute warning, you know, everybody stands up and applauds the ref's effort and then they go into the locker room and it's just call your own fouls from that point on.
I like it. Yeah. Call your own fouls, honor system. That's all. That's it. Well, Paul, you're the man. That was outstanding. Yeah. God, where can people find you on Twitter? I got it right here. I don't want to, it's at Paul Denner Jr., right?
Yep, Apple Denner Jr. It's all you got to do is just go on to Twitter there or at The Athletic, of course, myself and Jay Morrison, both covering the Bengals, Hear That Podcast, Growling, our Bengals podcast, and you know, just trying to keep up with you, TD. You know, I love all the work you've done, and it's been so fun to watch your project take off. And next time I'm in Buffalo, because I have in-laws up there, where we go? Are we going to Hamburg? Is that the spot?
Let's do it. Absolutely, man. Let's get some beers at Hamburg Brewing Company right around the stadium, about 10 minutes away. So,
okay.
But we got to get wings somewhere too. We got to show you the good wing spots. We'll do it right.
Yeah. I've had a few, I've had a few, but I've mostly had them at, my wife's grandmother would always get them ordered in, or she'd have some special, she'd make, they'd have beef on weck in her basement. And so like authentic Buffalo beef on weck in a grandma's basement.
Oh,
that's some legendary Buffalo stuff right there now. So I feel like a little bit of a Buffalonian. I've been ushered in to see kind of the underbelly of the greatness. But I do need like a true wing trip, I guess, to make myself, I don't know, christened.
Yes, and absolutely. And you know what? When I'm back in Cincinnati, which hopefully will be soon, because man, what a fun team to cover. Just love getting there. And the city's underrated. I love Cincinnati as a city.
Totally agree.
But I got to give Chili another shot. I think it was 2016, maybe, when I did a Vontez Burfict story.
Yeah.
I took like a little swipe at Skyline Chili in my story. And I had some people coming after me. I shouldn't have done it. Yeah. You know what? I got to give it
personal.
Another shot.
It's like insulting your family around here. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, you know, we can take our shots. And I don't mind it here because players, we talk to players a lot about Skyline Chili and they don't like it. A lot of them, because I honestly think if you grew up here or you grew up used to it, like you just love it. It's like something, it like gets into your bloodstream somehow. And like, you just, it's like
it's party
made of nicotine or something. I think there's nicotine in it. And like, you just, it's just an addiction. But if you're not, it's weird. You're not used to it. It scares you. It looks crazy and you don't like it. And that's totally fine. And like, people understand when people get all mad and yell, Skyline Chili sucks. Like, we don't care. Like, I like it. We like it. It's part of what makes Cincinnati, Cincinnati. The fact that you don't is totally fine. I get it. No one's asking you to like it. Stop yelling about it. And what mostly makes me mad is people don't realize Cincinnati is an incredible food city. Like, there are like legendary chefs that have blown up lately all across the city. Over the Rhine has become a like foodie heaven. And it's an awesome city for great food. Whether you're talking about barbecue, whether you're talking about fine dining, whether you're talking about beer, it's a huge brewery town. There's like,
I love that brewery.
Every neighborhood has
its own
local brewery. Rheingeist is one that's downtown. 50 West is one of my favorites. There's tons of, but every neighborhood has its own good one, which is not uncommon, but it's a really big deal here. There's a lot of history with these old breweries that got renovated and these really cool spaces. There's one right by my house, Mad Tree, that's massive and that just fills up every day. And it's just like all of this exists here, but people are too busy screaming about chili to even know that this thing exists, that Cincinnati is this incredible food and beer town. And so that's the only thing that frustrates me. Stop yelling about the chili. Come to town and let me show you how good this city is.
That's probably good, though, that we're all talking about chili because it keeps Cincinnati a secret, right? If I'm a local, I kind of like that.
That's fine by me. I don't mind.
Argue about our shitty chili and, you know, have your fun with that and let us enjoy the Eagle. You know, that fried chicken's incredible.
Absolutely.
I would kind of like that if I'm a local, so.
Yeah, I don't mind. It just feels personal when people they're like, you know, it's just unnecessary. No one's asking anybody to like it.
Honestly, I think it's
always the first thing people go to. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I just brought it up. I bet you everybody does. And it's the same thing in Buffalo where everybody thinks that everybody in Western New York is just smashing through tables. Like it's kind of dumb in my opinion. Like fans smash their tables when the team sucked and now they're good. Yeah. Why are you still breaking your tables? Like, find a hobby, guys. Like, it's not really everything you see at a tailgate. I think it's been a while, but I don't think that's just rampant everywhere.
Famously, my wife and some of our friends, we all went up when the Bengals played the Bills. This is probably maybe 6-7 years ago. And they played in a game where all four seasons happened in one game. It was like the most Buffalo thing. It was maybe October and it was warm. Everyone's peeling layers. It felt like summer. The sun was out. The sun went away. There was like rain. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, they're in the stadium and it started snowing. And it was like, how could all four seasons happen in 1 5-hour period? And it was like, Buffalo, man, it's just a unique place. When I think of it, I think of that game too.
Well, maybe they'll be playing in the AFC Championship game, and it's either going to be cold and Cincy or cold in Buffalo.
13 seconds away from it last year, right? I mean, where we almost had Burrow Allen instead of Burrow Mahomes, and we could have had a. I don't know what the weather was like in Buffalo on that particular Sunday, but I'm going to guess it was probably really cold.
Cold. I don't think it was snowing that day. I remember thinking about that because it would have been historic if they hosted the AFC Championship game. But I don't know. For my money, I think it could be what we see this year. Could be.
There's about 10 different options, right? I mean, the AFC is so hyper-loaded. I don't think anybody would be surprised to see any of those teams from the AFC West, Bengals, Ravens, Bills. Colts are sneaky. I mean, there's just so many teams that you can see it, you know, which full circle, it's tie the bow, TD, like any good long form, right? I mean, that's just it. Culture, momentum, whoever gets the most out of those guys, the talent is so even. across the board at the top of the AFC. It's going to be about whoever has that culture that propels some of their good players to play great and some of their average players to play good and kind of gets that special thing going. So we just don't, you don't know who that's going to be. We'll see who can make it happen.
Perfectly put, Paul, you're the freaking man. Thanks so much.
No problem.
I think I said 15 minutes and we almost went for an hour. So
Good. I could do another hour. I got time. I'm happy to do it.
You're not, you know, doing some calisthenics for this exhibition game tonight, you know, gearing up mentally, physically.
I got my work. Look, I have little kids, as you can probably tell by behind me. So I get up early. We're up early. I've already got a workout in. I mean, you know, we're deep in it already. I checked a lot of boxes today, TD.
One of the best parts about having little kids, right? I mean, we get up at like 4:35 each day and your body gets used to it. It's great.
Yeah. You get a lot of time for thinking in the middle of the night. You know what I mean? So
you don't sleep much, but yeah, there's a lot of time.
Get the thinking out of the way in the middle of the night and then get the doing done when you've already been up, you know, getting all your boxes checked before it's even lunchtime.
Well, thanks so much, man. We'll have to catch up here soon.
Looking forward to it.